Somebody else that I've been honored to know for decades is Greg Kot, who for the last 30 years has been the music critic of the Chicago Tribune. He's been here on the radio with us many, many, many times. He's been with me on TV many, many, many times. And Greg, as I was saying a couple of minutes ago, I'm sad that you're going to be leaving the Tribune. But I'm always happy when somebody makes a great quality of life decision like this. And that's what it sounds like this is for you. Welcome to the show, first of all, and congrats.
Well, thanks, Dean. No, I appreciate the kind words. I was not an easy decision. You know, I've been the critic there for 30 years and worked at the Trib for 40. So basically my entire adult life. I grew up reading the Trib and loved the idea of working there and to be able to work there for as long as I did. You know, privileged job like I had was a real honor. So, but I, you know, I think my decision was a difficult one. But I think, you know, when they offered a generous buyout, it was kind of like the writing on the wall. It's, you know, it's either now or never. I wanted to leave on my own terms. I don't know what the future is going to be like at the Trib in terms of ownership. I hope it works out for the best because journalism deserves to have to be invested in. But, you know, my naive way, I thought maybe if I leave, I can open up a job for a young journalist or two to carry on the tradition, because it's time that, you know, the tradition is carried on and that there is a future for newspapers. And, you know, the next year will tell us a lot in terms of the Tribune's fate, but I think, you know, it's a civic responsibility that the paper exist and continue to thrive. And, you know, I just hope that the people who invest in the paper recognize that.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting time. Not only, I mean, yes, for the Tribune, as you say, but for journalism in Chicago, you know, and what happens with the new owners of the Tribune and what they decide to do with the whole thing and how much staff they decide to keep. I guess this new company that's going to be running the paper is kind of known for slashing a lot of the staff. And, you know, if, you know, this, you know, the Tribune has always been a fantastic institution of amazing journalism. And the fact that Chicago is, you know, one time when I grew up, we had four daily newspapers in Chicago.
Yep, for sure.
And now, but, you know, the Tribune and the Sun-Times, and it would be a shame if the Tribune wasn't allowed to continue to do the great work that, you know, lots of us certainly remember it for. I don't think I remember you before your days as the music critic. How did you first start there, and how did you make the transition to become music critic there?
No, I started as a copy editor, and I came over. I worked a couple of years at the Quad City Times right out of college. I graduated from Marquette University with a degree in journalism. Quad Cities hired me as a copy editor, and it was a job that I learned how to do. I ended up helping put out the paper. I was kind of the backup guy as night news editor. So I moved up pretty fast. By the time I was 23, I got back from my honeymoon and got the call from the Trib that I'd been hired there. So packed up my bags, gave my notice, and, you know, said, 2 weeks I was back in Chicago, and I've been there ever since as a copy editor. Started there as a copy editor in 1980, and then sort of worked my way up into the features department. I started writing on the side. Once I got into the features, you know, I was able to do some writing. And I went out a lot. I loved the music scene in Chicago. I thought it was fantastic. I just loved music. I loved writing about it. I had put out my own fanzines and things like this and done some freelance work along the ways as a writer, music writer. And then the opportunity came along in 1990 to become the full-time music critic at the Trib. And they'd already seen my work. I think I built up a level of trust, too, because of my copy editing experience. The copy editing made me a much better writer, and I was able to bring that knowledge into my criticism. So, and then 1990, they offered me that job, and I've been there ever since.
Do you remember the first concert that you wrote a review for?
Yes. I believe it was a Faith No More concert in I think it was at the Vic or the Riviera, and I think Soundgarden opened that show. So there's some pretty big bands on that bill. And I do remember going to review that show in January. I started in January. And, of course, the thing for me was, you know, does anybody go out to shows when it's, you know, sub-zero temperatures? And in Chicago, everybody goes out to shows. You know,
right.
It's like
that's right.
The weather doesn't stop them. The culture just keeps flowing. The one thing about Chicago and covering music here, it was such a privilege because you had a dozen shows, especially on weekend nights, that you could have chosen from to go review. And then my part of my job was justifying why was this the one that I chose to review on a Saturday night, those kind of things. Those were good problems to have.
Right.
But, I've been in towns where you didn't have that wealth of cultural attractions every night. It was such a privilege to be able to work in the city and cover the music scene from that perspective.
I hope everyone will get online and take a look at the piece that Greg wrote this past Friday, in which he kind of reflects on his 30 years as music critic of the Tribune. I love the way that you start writing this, where you talk about, it says here, while scrolling in my notepad, I've been hit by a sod missile thrown by a Guns N' Roses fan, punched in the eye by a guy. We've got the pages mixed up here. The pages are...
Well, it was an Alice in Chains fan.
Yeah, yeah. But you talk about the crazy things that have happened to you on your way to reviewing concerts and things that have happened. What would you say is... Well, you go down a list of things that people said to you, icebreakers for potentially daunting interviews.
Yeah.
In fact, James Brown, for example. What was that experience like?
Well, that was, I got a tip before I interviewed him that, if you call him Mr. Brown, you can sort of break the ice a little bit with him because he can be a daunting interview. And he had just gotten out of prison at this time. He was making his comeback. This is like around 1990-91. And it was a coup to get an interview with James Brown. I mean, he's one of my musical heroes, and I was so honored to be able to talk to him. But, I'd read they could be difficult, and then somebody who knew him well told me that, and it really did break the ice because I called him Mr. Brown right off the bat, and you could tell he appreciated that, and he referred to me as Mr. Cott the rest of the interview.
Wow, very
nice. It's kind of, cordial, but he was also very nice and very... Very forthright in the interview, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. One of my favorites in here is you list your most ominous start to an interview.
Yeah. Well, Bono's call, I was driving up Lakeshore Drive, I'll never forget it. I got this call on my cell, and, no introduction, nothing, just a thick Irish accent. There's a dark cloud over us, Greg, and it's like... That's how the phone call. And he'd been trying to get a hold of me for a few weeks. He'd been trying to reach me while I was out of town. I'd been covering Coachella, the music festival out in California, and he'd been trying to reach me there. So the phone person who answers the phone on the weekend said, there's this guy named Bongo who keeps trying to reach you. And so eventually we connected. He was very mad at me at something I wrote. But, the Bono phone call was one of many where I would, I would talk to artists who had felt like I had misrepresented them, or
right.
Hey, how could you be so harsh? The Eagles did not like the fact that I did a review in which I basically said, they're charging you $14.50 per song, based on the ticket price, and is it worth it, really? That was that kind of a thing, and I got a really nasty phone call from Glenn Frey the next day.
Yeah.
Billy Joel, Van Halen, all those guys, they've come and gone. But, I always told people, and whenever I went to a journalism class to talk about it, I said, you should be able to stand in front of the person you wrote the article about and read it aloud from 5 feet away and have absolute conviction. Don't be snarky just to be snarky, because someday... inevitably, you will be, face to face with that person,
right.
And then what are you going to say?
Right, right.
So have absolute conviction in what you're saying, and I did, and I think that enabled me to have some really substantive discussions with people, like the Bono interview. Even though it got started kind of in a bad way, actually it was one of the best interviews I'd ever done because he really opened up about a lot of things that he normally didn't talk about. Normally they're just interested in promoting
right.
music, whatever they got out that time. But he was really talking about the way the music industry works on a more macro level. And it was really a fascinating conversation.
You know, I think that's, speaks to the degree of respect that the artists have for you. You talk about some of your best interviews being Frankie Knuckles and Prince and Eddie Vedder, Iggy Pop, Keith Richards, Mavis Staples. The list goes on and on. Read this piece from Friday's Tribune. It's really great. What do you think has changed the most in your 30 years of covering music?
Well, that's an easy one. I think the digital distribution of music has changed the game. I mean, we're living at a historic time where intellectual property has been digitized, and it's really changed everything in terms of how we distribute ideas in this country. And, you know, America is an idea-driven culture and society. We invent things. We create stuff here. And, you know, intellectual property is valuable. It's what we do best. And, I remember when the music industry started getting affected by this, when Napster rose in the college dorms in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, this rogue file sharing platform that basically made music essentially free for distributing. The other areas of intellectual property, publishing, you know, movies, whatever the case may be, were kind of looking at this like, this can't possibly happen to us, can it? I remember the Tribune had me in to give a little talk to the marketing and sales staff. How is this going to impact us?
Right.
And I said, it's coming for print, too. You're going to, you know, everything we do is going to be online, and it's going to be easily copied. And the need for one go-to source for news won't be there anymore, because a lot of the stuff that we do is effectively going to be shared, quote-unquote, by hundreds of readers who then in turn will be giving it to hundreds more readers, and the need for that single one-stop shopping for all news is going to be gone. They're going to pick and choose what stories they want to read on their own terms. And, you know, the rise of social media, et cetera, it just opened up the Pandora's box. So that's been a gigantic change in the way we get our music, how we listen to it, how it's created.
Exactly. I'm sure miss reading you in the Tribune, but we can still keep up with what you're going on, because you're not completely retiring, right? You're still going to be doing some things?
Oh, no, I can't. I don't know. Retire is not in my DNA. I'm looking forward to continuing with Sound Opinions. We Jim DeRogatis and I have a great time on public radio with that show. I also am full on with this travel basketball program I do for grade school boys and girls, Over the Edge, with Keith Maniscalco, and that's expanded from 9 kids to 500 a year. So we're pretty happy about the way that's growing. So there's plenty to do, and I've got another book in me, at least, Dean. I'm hoping to get book number 7 published sometime in the next year or two.
Been a pleasure to work with you, Greg, and I know we'll cross paths again. Thank you for joining us. Greg Kot, Chicago Tribune's music critic for the past 30 years. Thank you for joining us, Greg.
Thanks, Dean. Appreciate it.